So far, we've learned about motivation, we've determined our mission, and we've developed influential communication skills. Sometimes, even though we carefully develop a plan to achieve our goals, we get stopped. We run into a barrier that prohibits all further progress. Fear. Often it's a fear that we consciously know is unreasonable, yet we remain stuck. On this cassette, you'll learn how to remove these barriers. NLP Comprehensive Trainers Tim Holbum and Susie Smith will guide you through a series of amazing processes that remove fears, traumas, and other negative experiences from your past, so you can get on with your present and get the most out of your future. Tim and Susie are the co-founders of Western States Training Associates, through which they've taught NLP techniques to thousands. They are authors, consultants, and psychotherapists, and both are involved in organizational training and development. They're about to show you proven techniques for banishing fears and building self-confidence.
Hi, my name is Tim Holbum.
And I'm Susie Smith.
We're going to talk to you about some very powerful abilities for replacing fears, or even the lack of self-confidence, with the ability to take action. Abilities that you already have, but perhaps haven't yet tapped.
William James, the father of modern psychology, said, "The greatest discovery of our age is that by changing our inner attitudes, we change all the outer aspects of our lives." In NLP, we say, the map is not the territory. What you see drawn on a map is not what you see in the actual countryside. The map of New York doesn't look much like New York when you're in the middle of Manhattan staring up at the skyscrapers.
Feelings come from how you think about people, events, circumstances, or things, not the people, events, circumstances, and things themselves. The methods on this tape will teach you how to literally take new perspectives. Perspectives on memories and experiences that have caused you to feel fearful, phobic, or uptight. You'll learn how to become more self-confident, resourceful, and effective.
Let's give you some experience by doing a mental exercise. As with all the exercises in this program, be sure to set aside a time to give the ones on this cassette your full attention.
Imagine that you're lying on your back on a lounge chair at a swimming pool. Your hands are resting behind your head, and you can feel the warmth of the sun on your cheeks. As you look over at the high diving board, you can see someone jump off and then splash into the water. As you watch them climb up and jump off again, you realize that it's really yourself that you're watching. Actually, see yourself. Watch yourself jump again and notice what kinds of feelings you have.
It feels pretty neutral, doesn't it?
Now imagine that you're in the movie instead of just watching it. Imagine grasping the bars on either side of the ladder, looking up at the top, seeing the diving board in front of you. Notice how the metal rungs feel cool on your feet as you climb. As you reach the top, your whole perspective has changed, hasn't it? You're looking down at the water from the top of a tall ladder. Walk out to the end of the flimsy board and feel how it wobbles. Look at the water below you. Now, step off and feel your body sensations as you splash down into the water.
Notice how your feelings are very different when you're actually doing something as opposed to being an observer to yourself. When you're the observer, you feel detached. When you're the jumper, you get all the feelings of jumping and can feel the movement and exhilaration.
What happens when people are worried about or afraid of some situation or thing is that they invariably imagine the frightening situation and then step into it and experience it as though it's actually happening. However, when they imagine the same situation but watch themselves, they will have only the feelings of the observer.
So you can watch yourself have any unpleasant experience and handle it without fear, as long as you remain a detached observer. Connie Ray Andreas, senior NLP trainer and co-author of the NLP book Heart of the Mind, was working with a woman who was petrified of public speaking. Connie Ray got her to notice the internal picture she was making when she felt fearful. She was imagining being surrounded by people with giant critical eyes as she gave her presentation. When Connie Ray had the woman detach and watch herself, all her scared feelings disappeared. She then could see that her audience was just a normal group of people. She literally took a different point of view.
People have been talking about points of view for centuries. However, most people have thought about them as being metaphorical rather than literal. You can literally view something from any point in space. Each different point of view will give you somewhat different feelings. The most profound changes, however, are when you look at yourself versus looking out of your own eyes at any given situation.
When you look at yourself, it's called dissociation. When you look from your own point of view, it's called association.
Your posture helps drive these different mental states of dissociation and association.
Try this exercise. Sit in a straight back chair about 4 or 5 inches from the back of the chair. Just sit back comfortably. As you do, just let your eyes relax and defocus. Let your chin rise slightly. Now notice how this posture, this physiology, begins to change the perspective that you take on the world. Notice the feeling of detachment that goes with this posture. This is the physiology of dissociation.
It's very useful to recognize dissociation in others when you're communicating with them. When people are dissociated, they're apt to be analyzing the experience and thinking about what's going on rather than being involved in it.
Now try this. Scoot back in the chair so that your lower back is touching the chair and then lean forward slightly. Looking around in both directions, imagine what you would need to do with your body in order to catch a ball if it were tossed to you. Your physiology is more in the situation and you're more with it.
This is called an associated physiology. Notice that when other people are adopting this kind of physiology, they are more fully engaged in whatever's going on. Your physiology can have a lot to do with your ability to either associate or dissociate. When doing any of the processes or techniques that we're suggesting on this tape, you want to adopt the appropriate physiology for each step of the technique.
Let's do another experiment. Think of two memories from your past. One that's pleasant and one that's unpleasant. Take a minute to re-experience those memories in whatever way that you naturally do. Notice how you recall those experiences. Are you reliving them? Or are you watching yourself? Or somehow observing the experience? When you relive an experience, it's said to be an associated experience. When you watch yourself, it's called a dissociated experience.
Whichever way you recalled those memories naturally, go back and reverse them. So if in the unpleasant one you were dissociated, associate in and notice that you can get all your feelings back.
That one's not much fun.
If you are associated in the memory, step back out of your body and see yourself dissociated.
Notice how the charge goes out of that memory when you do that.
Now, switch how you recall the pleasant memory. If you're dissociated in the pleasant memory, step into it and experience it like it's happening now.
That helps you get back the pleasant feelings.
If you are associated in the pleasant memory, step out for a moment and see what it's like to watch it. And having gone through this experience, how do you want to remember things? Think about people who get depressed. There are often people who dissociate from their positive experiences and associate into the negative ones.
You may know people who are on an emotional roller coaster. They're up 1 minute and down the next. These are the folks that often associate into almost all of their experiences and for whom dissociation is a rare experience.
Ideally, if you want to enjoy life, you'll associate into your positive memories and dissociate from your negative ones. You won't lose any information, so you can still learn from your mistakes.
To teach your brain this process, take a little time and picture several of your unpleasant memories, dissociated. To increase the dissociation, you can move those memory pictures farther away from you. Notice how moving them changes your emotional response to them. You should feel more detached from those memories.
If you have trouble dissociating from your negative experience, imagine that you're looking at it through a thick piece of plexiglass. This will allow you to separate yourself from the experience enough to recall the information without having negative feelings. You'll still remember any important learnings.
On the other hand, you can run through a series of pleasant experiences, taking the time to fully associate into each one. This will give you a way to enjoy your pleasant experiences more fully.
If you practice this a little bit, pretty soon your brain will begin to get the right idea and do the same thing automatically with all your other memories. When you learn how to associate or dissociate consciously, you then have a profound way of changing your life experience.
Dissociation is an especially useful process for taking the sting out of your really unpleasant memories, the ones that produce fear. NLP co-developer Richard Bandler developed a very fast and powerful technique for helping people remove fears, especially difficult fears like phobias, very quickly. It's called the Fast Phobia Technique.
And we'd like to give you an example of how to utilize that technique now. Our bet is, even with the little bit of description we've given you thus far, that you'll be able to figure out just why it works. What's best about this technique is that it works to remove your fear permanently.
When we initially learned this method, one of the first people that we worked with was an insurance salesman who had a fear of elevators. If a client was above the third or fourth floor, he had to take the stairs or avoid visiting them altogether. This fear really limited his income. We asked him where he got that fear, and he didn't have a clue. He couldn't recall the first time, but said as far as he knew, he'd been afraid of elevators his entire life. He could recall as a child being afraid to go up to the dentist's office on the seventh floor of a building and having to walk all the way up. On one visit, his older sister made him ride the elevator up to the dentist's office with her. He still shuddered when he thought about it.
To help him overcome his fear, we had him imagine that he could see himself on the elevator going up. He could picture that seven-year-old boy going up in the elevator filled with terror and panic, as though he were watching the scene from a distance. We had him watch it in black and white, so it seemed even less real and more detached to him. In addition to seeing himself in the elevator, we let him know that it was very important that he hear that little boy crying and carrying on in the picture as well. We also made sure that his internal dialogue was appropriate for detachment, for dissociation. We had him say, "He's frightened over there," and "That little boy is frightened." After he watched himself go up in the elevator and then get off and know he was safe again, we had him associate into the situation in a special way. We had him jump into the scene as opposed to watching himself be in the scene. He was to jump into the scene at the end, after it was over, and go through the same experience backwards, from the end to the beginning. So he popped out at the beginning before the event ever occurred. He did this in full color, and he did it very quickly, in about 1.5 seconds, from the end back to the beginning.
Reliving the experience backwards quickly changes the order of the experience around in your brain in such a way that the fear is actually eliminated. You just can't have the fear anymore. It's as if doing this process in your mind pulls the fear from the situation. What we mean by being in the situation backwards is that you actually jump into the ending and imagine that you're doing everything backwards. Walking backwards, talking backwards, moving backwards, doing the entire process backwards. The elevator is going down instead of up, and you end up at the beginning of the experience before it occurred.
Sometimes we have people actually practice moving backwards before we have them do the technique, so that we're sure they know what to do.
The man with the elevator phobia is still doing fine after 6 years. We tested his fear right after doing the technique by riding a glass elevator to a 13th floor restaurant where he enjoyed a glass of celebration wine.
The same technique can work on a trauma. We were once talking to a man who had a particularly nasty life experience. He'd gone home early from work one day to share with his wife the exciting news that he'd just gotten a promotion that he didn't expect. When he got home, he walked into his backyard, where he knew his wife would be gardening. Tragically, he found her dead. She had died of a heart attack at the age of 35. This scene had powerfully remained with him. Whenever he thought of her or the 10 years of marriage that he had had with her, he would vividly picture his wife lying in the backyard, and he'd relive the shock of the experience all over again.
To help him change the nature of this traumatic experience, we had him watch the same experience as though he was watching it from 100 feet up in the air. He literally saw himself walk into his backyard and find his wife. He saw himself sit down, put his face in his hands, and sit for a few minutes. He had the beginning picture of himself walking up the street, and he had the ending picture of himself sitting with his face in his hands. We had him jump into the movie, imagine he was sitting for a second with his face in his hands, and then get sucked back through the trauma in 1.5 seconds, just like he was being pulled back by a giant vacuum cleaner. Having experienced this backwards had the effect of unpairing the fear from the memory, and he began to be able to remember his life with her more easily. We then had him associate into the many pleasant memories he could recall with his wife.
It's important to note that the same technique works exquisitely on post-traumatic stress disorders, such as the type that many of the Vietnam veterans and police officers face. The technique is primarily designed for any situation where there is a strong fear or painful experience such as a phobia. Anytime you have an intense fear of something in the world, it can be called a phobia.
You could have a phobia about riding in elevators or seeing spiders. You could have a phobia of driving on the freeway or of riding in airplanes. So anytime you have an intense fear about something, this process can be very useful.
There are two things to keep in mind when you have any kind of fear. First of all, some people with phobias think there's something wrong with them, that they're crazy or it's stupid to have the fear. Actually, if you have a phobic response to something, it means your brain can learn very quickly. Phobias are typically the result of a one-time learning experience.
For example, we heard about a woman who had a snake phobia. The snake had been thrown at her by some kids when she was a little girl. Somehow, outside of her consciousness, whenever she saw a snake or thought about one, she would imagine that dangerous and frightening snake flying at her through the air. That one experience had created a fear that had lasted for over 20 years. She never forgot to get scared when she saw a snake.
This was powerful evidence of her ability to learn, especially after experiencing something only one time.
The second important thing to remember is that the fear is a communication from your unconscious mind. Your unconscious mind is attempting to communicate to you that danger is present and that you need to be careful.
We want to now take a moment and have you explicitly go through each of the steps. You'll be able to change a fearful experience into a flat, detached memory. If you're driving a car or operating machinery that requires your attention, do not actively practice the technique. Set aside a time when you can give your full attention to the process.
Only use this method on situations, memories, or events where you want to eliminate strong negative feelings. Do not use this technique on pleasant experiences. You'll take the fun out of life.
Now let's do the technique. Take a minute and think of something that you're afraid of. It could be making a cold call, giving a speech in public, or it might even be a phobia, such as the fear of driving a car or flying in an airplane. Take a minute and think of what you're afraid of, just enough to get a little bit of the feeling. You want to be sure that you can get access to the part of you that creates the fear.
Now, in your mind's eye, imagine you're sitting in a movie theater. See yourself up on the screen in a still picture just before you had the fearful response for the first time.
If you can't think of the first time, think of any time that you did have the fear response in that particular situation.
sitting in the movie theater, we'd like you to look up at the screen and see a black and white still picture of yourself right before the frightening event actually occurred.
Now imagine that part of you floats out of your body, up behind you, and goes into the projection booth, so that you can now look out and see yourself watching yourself on the screen. If this is a height phobia, instead of going up into the projection booth, just imagine you move back a few rows behind yourself, so you're looking over your own shoulder at the screen. As you watch yourself watching yourself, begin to run a black and white movie of what actually occurred and see yourself going through that traumatic experience. Be sure to watch yourself watching yourself go through that experience. You can do it quickly. Rapidly, get to the end. You want to get to the end of the situation when the trauma was over. You might still have felt shaky or in pain after the event, but you can tell from your movie that you're safe. The trauma's over with and the frightening part's gone.
Now, create a still picture of the you that you were after the trauma was over with. In a moment, we're going to ask you to jump in and go through the experience backwards, just like you were being sucked back through it by a giant vacuum cleaner. Imagine doing it all backwards, and you want to do it very quickly in 1.5 seconds.
That's about this long.
Bzzz. Okay, jump in and do it backwards now. That's right.
Now that you've done it, actually get up and move your body around. Shake your arms and take a deep breath. Now, think of the experience again. If the fear registered a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10 before doing the technique, what would it be now? If it's more than a 2, repeat the same process by jumping into the end and running back through the experience to the beginning. You will find the experience has substantially changed. It's important to gently test the change you've just created. For example, if your fear was of heights, you might go to a fairly high place, look out a window, and notice how your fear has changed.
Test yourself gently and carefully with respect for your own personal safety. Use appropriate caution in dangerous situations. Most people have a hard time believing that you can change a fearful response that quickly. The thing that's important to recognize is that you cannot change slowly. Your brain learns very quickly. The brain learns by having patterns go by rapidly. If you watched one frame of a movie every day for 5 years, would you get the plot?
Of course you wouldn't. You only get the meaning of a movie if all those pictures go by really fast. Trying to change something slowly is like having a conversation at the rate of one word a day.
People often ask, how often do I need to practice this process to make it work?
Once you've done this process, you should never need to practice it. Again, it's a learning process. You learn to have your phobia very quickly, and you're learning to change it very quickly as well. So far, we've explored two thinking perspectives, association and dissociation. And found that by utilizing dissociation appropriately, you can create impressive change in your life.
There is another perspective that you can add that can greatly increase both your personal effectiveness and the wisdom with which you approach your world. To describe this, we're going to relabel and rethink being associated or being dissociated and add another point of view, yet another perspective.
Being associated can be thought of as being in first position. In other words, it's like you're in the first person. You're experiencing things through your own eyes, in your own physiology. Thinking about things with your own values and through your own mental filters. First position is one perspective on the world.
Second position is a different kind of perspective. It's the point of view you adopt when you step into the shoes of another person and experience something through their eyes, their filters, their personal history, and their physiology. When we ask someone to look at something through our eyes, we're making a request of them to take second position, our position, on a particular issue, and try it out through our point of view.
To get a clearer idea of second position, think back to a time when you were in a movie theater, watching a film on the screen, a time when you really adopted a character's feelings. For example, if someone was being chased, you had all the sensation of being pursued. Your hands were sweaty and your heart was racing. Yet you were sitting safely in the theater. That's truly taking second position.
Certain really effective actors are known for their ability to create this rich sense of empathy, to step into the shoes of their characters and really become those people.
When you take second position, you get new and useful information about any particular issue.
Third position is a little like dissociation. You watch yourself. It's a neutral, detached point of view. The difference between third position and dissociation is your timing. You go into third position after you have taken first and second position. This allows you to consider a situation in an objective way, using the information you gathered from first and second positions.
When we teach conflict resolution, negotiation skills, or customer service skills, or as we help organizations build effective teams, we almost always teach people how to consciously move between first, second, and third position. It empowers people to plan and act with wisdom and self-confidence in relation to others. Think of an abusive or autocratic boss that you might have had at some time in your past. Wasn't that person stuck making decisions from only their own first position? You can probably think of many more examples.
The ability to take a total first, second, or third position may be rare in our world.
Einstein, Gandhi, Mozart, Disney, and many other geniuses wrote about these points of view and indicated that they actively used these different perspectives as a part of their thinking processes.
For example, Einstein used the process of second and third position to create his theory of relativity. He imagined what it would be like to be riding on the end of a light beam at 186,000 miles per second, while another Einstein watched him from third position. These thoughts were the basis for the theory that helped to transform people's thinking about the structure of the universe.
Gandhi wrote that in preparation for negotiation, he would consider situations through the eyes of the Hindu, the Muslim, and the British. He would think of actual people that he believed represented these particular points of view and adapt their body postures.
This is a clear reference to a second position.
Gandhi also said that he considered his negotiation outcomes through the eyes of the world, that's third position, before proposing them. We believe that much of his wisdom resulted from his skill at taking different perspectives.
Walt Disney also used the concept in his imaginative process for creating stories. He switched position with his audience while he was planning and designing. He wanted to look at the story from their point of view. Because the ability to consciously dance between these positions is so valuable, we want you to take a minute and go through an internal process. If you do it fully, you'll discover the usefulness of adopting each of these perceptual positions.
Think back to some time when you were in an argument with someone and you felt angry, or you were embarrassed by someone, or somehow you had an unpleasant experience.
Don't choose the worst thing that has ever occurred in your life.
Instead, think back to a time where, when you remember it, you still get back some unpleasant feelings. Remember it from first position, being in your own body, looking at the other person, and reliving it just like it happened. Notice how the other person looks and sounds.
Now, float out of your body, up above the scene, and look down from a neutral, dissociated perspective. See yourself and the other person, and watch again what occurred. This time, pay particular attention to the behavior of the other person. As you see the interaction, watch yourself, and also watch the other person. How are they standing, moving, or sitting? What is their posture like? Their breathing rate? Their tone of voice? Their facial expression? What do you know about them in relationship to their experiences? What do you know about their personal history?
Factor these in. As you do, imagine floating down into that other person and actually become them. Mold your body to match their body posture. And now that you've become that person, look back at yourself and relive the experience from the other person's point of view.
Once you have thoroughly done that, feel yourself floating out to the side of the interaction. So far, you've considered the situation through your own eyes, your own experience, from first position, and you've considered it through the eyes of the other and their experience, which is second position.
Now we'd like you to take a third position on the same issue. Watch it fully, seeing and hearing both you and the other person over there in the distance.
Now float over, back into yourself, and re-experience the situation fully.
Notice what you now know from having gone to second and third position that you didn't know before. How have your feelings changed about the situation?
Most people will report that they feel less charged or have less intense feelings about the situation. But even more important is the new perspective gained as a result of doing this process. Robert Diltz, one of the developers of NLP, said, "Excellence is a passionate commitment to something from first position."
But he said, "Wisdom is the ability to consciously move back and forth between first, second, and third position. The more fully and completely you can do that, the more you will enhance your own personal power. You'll also enhance your own ability to maintain a resourceful thinking process, whether you're negotiating or giving a presentation, approaching a new customer, or dealing with your child. As you use the processes that we've discussed on this tape, you'll increase your mental flexibility and your ability to deal powerfully and positively with a variety of people and situations."
Take time right now to think of a situation where you feel fearful or you would like to have more behavioral choice. Do the exercise of changing the association and dissociation of your memories. Take the pleasant life memories and make sure that you're associated in them so that the joy and life of those experiences truly touch you.
Then take the unpleasant, distressing, life-deceasing memories and dissociate from them. Students of ours who've done this for 10 minutes a day found that in 2 weeks their brains got the idea, and from then on all their unpleasant memories were dissociated. The fun, enjoyable, and pleasurable memories of their lives were more easily available to them as resources for their future.
On the other side of this tape, we'll show you how to expand these principles to gain self-confidence and even more personal effectiveness. On the other side of this tape, we talked about how fears and anxieties can get in the way of operating at peak performance.
On this side, we'll be exploring additional techniques for dealing with the anxiety that comes from self-judgment and criticism. These techniques are extremely beneficial in building self-confidence.
How often do you criticize yourself and then feel bad? What happens to your confidence when you put yourself down?
Nothing can diminish your performance as effectively as can the sting of negative self-evaluation. There are two main mental processes that you might use to put yourself down and feel depressed or anxious.
The first is to make internal pictures of failing or messing up.
The second is to have an internal voice that constantly reminds you of what you're doing wrong.
A man who was in a recent team-building session we were conducting had a big problem with negative self-evaluation. He said that he'd been feeling blue and depressed for over a year. In exploring his thought processes, we discovered that he was making pictures of all the things he didn't do well and then commenting internally about how awful he was.
We said, "What about all the things you do well?" He responded that he knew his successes were in his brain. He just couldn't focus on them.
Using the techniques that we'll explain in a moment, we assisted him in discovering new choices in both his internal pictures and internal dialogue, so that his depressed feelings were replaced with feelings of self-confidence. This would help him to become a more dynamic and successful member of his work team.
Have you ever said something to someone and had a voice fire off inside your head that said, "You dummy, whatever possessed you to say that?"
Or have you ever thought about an upcoming presentation and found yourself making pictures of getting up in front of the group and looking nervous and making a fool out of yourself?
These are ways that you might be setting yourself up to fail ahead of time.
Let's deal with the internal voice first. Think back to a time, a specific situation, when you noticed that your internal voice was being critical or was making disparaging comments about you. As you recall that experience, pay special attention to that critical voice. Where is it located? Is it on top of your head? Directly behind one of your ears? Is it inside your head? Or is it coming from a distance away from you? Is the voice loud or soft? Fast or slow? What is the tonality of the voice? Is it sarcastic or strident? Does it sound like your own voice? Or by chance, does it sound like someone close to you who's been critical of you in the past? For example, a parent or older sibling or other relative? Notice your emotional response as you listen to the voice.
Now, keeping the same situation in mind, let's move the voice around. If it's located directly behind your left ear, what happens when you move it to the top of your head? Try moving the voice farther away, outside of your body. Now try this one. Move the voice to your right big toe and let it be critical from down there. Really listen to it. That move should make a big difference.
Now put the voice back to where it was originally and play around with different tonalities. What happens if you speed the voice way up or slow it way down? Like you're changing the speed on a phonograph. Make the voice sound like Elmer Fudd or Mickey Mouse or a computerized recording. Try making it playful, teasing, or seductive.
Notice how your emotional response changes as you change the speed, tonality, or location of the voice. Now let's discover the intention of the voice that's critical by asking what it's trying to do for you.
One of the presuppositions in NLP is that every behavior has some kind of positive intention for us, or we wouldn't continue doing it. You can assume that this critical voice has something positive that it's attempting to accomplish for you. It's merely a matter of finding out what that is. Once you know the intention, you can assist the voice in finding other ways to meet that intention, ways that won't rob you of your self-confidence.
So again, think back to a time when that voice was there being critical of you. And as you reassociate into that experience, ask the voice, "What's your intention for me?" Or,
"What are you trying to accomplish for me?" Or,
"What purposes are you meeting when you're being critical of me?" Common answers might be,
"I'm trying to keep you from making a fool of yourself."
Or, "I'm making sure you do what's right."
Or, "I want you to be all that you can be."
Think carefully. Do you value the voice's intention, even though you may not appreciate what this voice says to you? If not, keep working with the voice until you get an intention that you do find acceptable.
Say, for instance, the voice says, "I'm trying to get you to be perfect."
You can then ask, "And when you're trying to get me to be perfect, what does that do for you?"
Well, when you're perfect, you're not hurting anyone's feelings.
And when I'm not hurting anyone's feelings, what does that do for you?
Then you have the love and respect of others and have worthwhile relationships.
That's an intention that most of us can certainly appreciate.
Once you've determined the positive intention of your critical voice, you can begin to negotiate with it. First, affirm that you value the intention. Then ask your voice if it would be interested in additional choices and behaviors in getting that intention met, especially if they work as well as or better than what your voice is currently doing.
That's an offer your voice can't refuse. If the voice doesn't agree to have more and better choices, then it obviously doesn't understand the offer.
Be sincere with yourself. Think of how powerful it can be to have that voice, that part of you with strength and drive, as your strong inner ally.
Now we need help from your creative part, the part of you that plans and comes up with new ideas. Ask your creative part to generate lots of ideas about how the voice can meet its positive intention for you, and have the voice choose three different ways to meet its intention. These are ways that will work as well as or better than what it's currently doing. What's especially important is that you learn to negotiate new ways of behaving that will build up your self-confidence rather than drag you down. It's not much fun to be constantly reminded of your every fault and mistake without new choices in your behavior.
You can also negotiate with the voice about when it offers you feedback. Ask the voice to give you feedback and suggestions after you've completed your performance. Usually that's much more useful than when you're in the middle of something. Many top-performing athletes will hum a tune or repeat a positive phrase over and over in their minds so they can keep their confidence levels high. These athletes say you're less likely to listen to the voice that offers criticism if you do that during a performance.
Now that you've tuned into your internal voices and the kinds of things you say to yourself, you'll find it easy to listen to the patterns of speech that can get in the way of your personal effectiveness. There's a story about a scraggly-looking man who, when digging in the Arabian desert, came across a treasure chest that was guarded by a genie. The genie told the man that the chest was full of all sorts of exotic treasures, gold, jewelry, heirlooms, and silk. In order to claim all the wealth in the treasure chest, the man needed to do only one thing. Avoid thinking of the color blue as he opened the chest. The man chuckled with glee at the ease of the assignment and repeated over and over, "Don't think of blue, don't think of blue," as he opened the chest.
Obviously, he failed to obtain the treasure.
Repeat the following statements in your head. Become aware of the pictures and feelings they generate.
Don't think about how angry you are about what your boss just said to you.
Or, don't notice the sensation in your stomach right now.
Or how about, don't get nervous about this, whatever you do.
Part of our brain does not understand negations. Negations are the negative, the not, in a sentence.
Instead of telling yourself what not to do, use language stated in the affirmative, in the positive. So instead of saying to yourself, "Don't get nervous about this, whatever you do,"
say,
"I'm feeling calm and relaxed."
This way you direct yourself to feel resourceful rather than uptight. There are other internal language patterns that can interfere with feeling self-confident.
Do you ever use these statements on yourself? "I never do anything right. I'm a crummy, rotten parent. Everybody always rejects me. I might as well give up. I'm just a failure."
As you listen to these statements, what happens to your emotional state? It feels hopeless, doesn't it? Instead of putting yourself down, you can focus on the behaviors you want to change. Next time, check your emotional state using the following method for questioning your self-talk.
"I never do anything right."
Really? Never? You mean there's never been a time when you did something right? What specifically did you do that did not turn out well?
"I've done some things right. Actually, many things. Only once in a while do I really goof up." Wow, that's like using a zoom lens. It really changes my experience.
Notice how challenging your self-talk begins to change both the content and the quality of your internal pictures. By asking yourself these kinds of questions, you can go from vague generalities about yourself to a specific behavior that you can change using the techniques explained on this tape, including the first, second, and third position processes covered on the other side.
By now, you might be realizing that one important function of your internal voices is to create internal pictures and movies, and thus your emotions.
We've already dealt with how your own internal criticism can rob you of confidence. Now we want to turn to dealing with other people's criticism, because that can be equally devastating. We often teach the next technique in our business trainings because it's such a big issue in the workplace. The technique is called A Strategy for Responding to Criticism. For more information about it, refer to the book Heart of the Mind by Steve and Connie Ray Andreas.
We have a friend who's the head of training and organizational development for a large bank. The other day, when we went to lunch with him, he was feeling quite down on himself because of something that kept happening at work.
His boss, the CEO of the bank, was being critical of him, and he didn't know how to react to the criticism without becoming defensive. He said he just got a gut-wrenching pain in his stomach whenever the boss criticized him. Then he'd become defensive, feel depressed, and end up being unproductive for the rest of the day.
We suggested that he step back and see himself being criticized by his boss, in his mind's eye, and actually run a movie of his boss criticizing him. This allowed him to listen to what his boss was saying without getting all uptight and defensive. We then had him compare what his boss was saying he had done with what he thought he had done. His boss kept saying he wasn't a team player because he missed parts of certain meetings.
Our friend thought about this and said, "But I only missed the part of the meetings that don't directly relate to my department." Then he thought, "But it must seem to the others that I'm not supporting them, and they don't have a way of knowing what I'm doing when I'm not there." He realized that a part of his boss's criticism was valid feedback.
He just hadn't been able to hear it before because he became defensive so quickly. We had him think about how he wanted to respond to his boss. He thought of an appropriate response and then ran a rehearsal movie of himself interacting with his boss. We had him carefully notice his boss's reaction. He also imagined himself either attending the meetings or explaining to the management team why he would be missing from them. This helped to program his memory to follow through and make use of the feedback that his boss had given him. When we were through, he realized he was feeling more positive about his boss.
What he hadn't yet realized was that by rethinking how he responded to criticism in this particular way, he had reprogrammed his brain so that in the future, whenever he'd be faced with criticism, he'd step back, evaluate the criticism, think of an appropriate response, deliver it, and consider how to utilize any useful feedback.
You can reprogram your brain like our friend did by practicing the following technique.
Begin by recalling a recent criticism that you reacted badly to. where you didn't like the way you responded. Pick a mild criticism for learning this technique.
See yourself about to be criticized by someone, and as soon as you recognize that it's criticism, dissociate. Most people find it easiest to do this visually. As you begin to receive the criticism, you can imagine stepping out of your body to the side, see yourself surrounded by a plexiglass shield, or see the critical words being printed out in a cartoon balloon.
This kind of dissociation prevents immediate bad feelings and also provides objectivity. After you've dissociated, make a detailed movie of the criticism. Then watch the movie, seeing that you out there, hearing what the critic is saying. What does the person mean? If you don't have enough information to make a clear movie, see yourself asking the critic for more information. Now that you have their side of the story, make a movie of what you think happened in the situation and compare your movie with what the other person says happened.
Do the movies match or mismatch? They might match, match only partially, or completely mismatch. Now, based on your comparison of the movies, decide on an appropriate response. There are many different possible responses depending on the circumstances.
You might say, "I'm sorry," or, "My intention was to let you know I was concerned," or, "From my viewpoint, it looks very different."
Or you might respond, "That's an interesting interpretation of what happened," or, "Perhaps I could have done that differently." Or even, "Thank you for expressing your opinion."
Choose a response that fits your situation and lets the other person know that you are choosing to remain in control. As you see yourself delivering the response, notice what reaction you get from the other person. You can modify your response until you're pleased with the result.
Next, decide if you want to change your behavior based on the feedback you've just received. If so, see yourself using different behaviors in the future. By future pacing, you'll have these new behaviors available when you get into that type of situation. When you're finished, pull that part of you that learned this new strategy back into your body so that the knowledge of that dissociated part becomes fully a part of you now.
This strategy for responding to criticism can be used when you think that someone might criticize you or when you criticize yourself. The strategy for criticism is effective for detaching from criticism and discovering what useful feedback is available. It allows you to connect with others at a deeper level, and it certainly builds your self-confidence.
Let's move on to another technique for giving you more options in your behavior. We were working with a woman in a negotiation training recently who had the complaint that she wasn't as flexible as she would like to be when dealing with her boss. She mentioned that she was typically very talkative and expressed her feelings openly with people. But she was disappointed that she didn't do that with him.
She recounted an experience in the recent past where she had been called to his office and was told about some drastic change in her job duty as manager of the typing pool. She sat silently and didn't have the courage to give her boss important information that he was lacking, information that would have made a difference in the decision he made. She felt passive and uncomfortable in that situation and behaved really non-assertively.
We ask her how she would like to feel instead of passive and non-assertive. She said, "In control, centered, and intelligent." We had her move her eyes up and begin making pictures of three different behaviors she could do in that situation. Behaviors that would help her feel in control, centered, and intelligent.
This is what she told us about her pictures. In the first picture, she saw herself breathing deeply and repeating to herself, "Mind alert, body calm." In her second picture, she imagined switching to second position to gain empathy with her boss. And in her third picture, she was asking what his intentions were first, and then offering the information that he needed to make his decision. When she compared her choices to determine which would work best, she discovered that her first choice of breathing worked best. This helped her to get comfortable enough to follow up with the third choice while in his presence.
As her cue to engage in this new behavior, we had her internally picture her boss across his desk. Then she fully imagined doing this process and having a voice say, "I'll do that one. I can handle the added responsibility."
Her feelings about herself and dealing with her boss changed dramatically after doing this technique.
Let's have you do this technique now. It's called the frustration into flexibility technique. Find a situation in the past where you weren't performing the way you wanted to. First, step back into the situation long enough to notice what feelings you're having. Then, label your feelings. Give them a name like confused, frightened, anxious, spacey, fearful. Just give the emotions a name.
Now, detach from the event and watch yourself behaving in whatever way you behaved at the time. At this point, you're gathering information. As you watch this scene, ask yourself what emotion, what feeling you'd like to be experiencing in that context. Keeping that emotion in mind, see yourself doing different behaviors in that scene that could give you that feeling you want. It's easier to create pictures when looking up, so move the gaze of your eyes upward as you do this.
Take the time to see yourself doing at least three behaviors in that situation that are different from what you did in the past. Make one of your choices outrageous and humorous, something that you wouldn't have considered in the past. This will add to your flexibility. Take all the time you need to do this. Turn off the tape if you need more time now.
Next, we want you to compare your three alternatives. Step into,
in other words, associate,
into the behavior you thought of first, and imagine you're in that situation behaving that way. Get your body into it. How intensely does this behavior create the emotion you want?
Now just let that choice go and step into the next behavior you imagined, checking the intensity of the emotion created in that choice. Compare these two choices. Which gives you the stronger emotion, or seems like the best choice? Code this one as the front runner, and then let it go. Now, step into the final choice, checking the intensity of the emotion created. Compare this choice with the front runner and choose your favorite. As you imagine acting out that behavior, have an enthusiastic internal voice saying, "That's the one I'm going to do."
Let's make it automatic now using the process called future pacing. Think of an external cue that will be present in the situation. For example, if the situation is public speaking, the cue could be seeing a group of people seated and waiting for you to speak, or seeing a podium in front of you. If you choose dealing with your boss, the cue could be seeing or hearing that person. If you choose dealing with an angry client on the phone, the cue is hearing angry tones on the other end of the line.
First, imagine the cue, and then put yourself right there in the situation, behaving in the new way you've chosen. You're programming that new behavior into the future situation by doing this.
One way to make sure that you are consistently creating new behavioral choices and building your confidence is to build this technique in as a daily review. Here's how. Before drifting off to sleep at night, run a movie of your day and the activities that you did during the day. Stop when you come to a scene in the movie where you're not pleased with your behavior. Run this process you just learned on that scene. So picture your external cue and then put yourself in the situation exhibiting the new behavior. You will build in a new, more resourceful behavior for the future. This way you're constantly reviewing your actions with the intention of changing those behaviors that don't work for you. This takes what you might have considered failure and turns it into feedback. Feedback about changes and improvements that you can make.
Utilizing this daily review in the way we've just described has given me an incredible sense of control over myself and the way I behave in the world. It's a great confidence booster.
There's a slogan that we heard years ago when we were first introduced to NLP that's been very useful to us also. And that's, anything worth doing is worth doing poorly at first.
Many of us set such incredibly high standards for ourselves that we stop ourselves from attempting something new, such as skiing, writing poetry, or using a computer, because we're afraid we won't do it perfectly at first. Think of what your life would be like now if you had stopped yourself from trying new things when you were young. Imagine that as you were learning to walk, you pulled yourself up to a chair, took a wobbly step forward, and fell. And you thought, well, I'm not going to try that again. I must have looked like a real jerk. Life would be very interesting. You'd still be crawling around on all fours.
At those youthful stages, you kept on trying until you got things to work. Keep in mind, as you're learning something new, that using the feedback you're getting is one of the most important elements to learning.
Sometimes we lack confidence for a very good reason, because we don't have the competency to do something well. For example, I lack confidence in my ability to fly an airplane because I've never done it. All the confidence in the world won't make me a safe pilot. You probably don't want to fly with me until I've learned the appropriate skills.
Or have you ever listened to a confident speaker who bored you because he wasn't competent to speak on the subject matter? What does it take to become competent, really good at something? Let's explore a task you can do really easily and skillfully, like driving an automobile. Think about the first time you ever drove a car. You probably felt a little overwhelmed at all the things you had to consciously do in order to make the car go down the street, especially if that car had a stick shift. You were sitting there, trying to steer, looking out the windshield, looking in the rearview mirror, coordinating the clutch and the gas, and trying to follow the rules of the road at the same time your dad was yelling at you.
If you were like me, you probably killed the engine 2 or 3 times before you ever got it going.
Now, some time and experience later, you can jump in your car and drive 50 miles or so on the interstate without even thinking about what you're doing or where you're going. Have you ever experienced sailing past a freeway exit you were supposed to take?
Who's driving the car? You've developed a part of you that can drive it automatically and presumably safely, even without having to consciously think about it. You've streamlined your behavior to become competent at driving your car.
Your brain does similar processes with everything you learn. You use the same brain skills for learning to drive a car that you used for learning to be self-critical or lacking self-confidence in certain situations. By now, you've learned that your brain is always doing the best it can, and that you can count on it to do what it has learned how to do. That is, until you use your brain's own language to change the instructions. So, if you know you have competence in an area but lack the self-confidence to move ahead, or have fears and anxieties, set aside time now to do the NLP techniques on this tape. As a matter of fact, you could schedule a meeting with yourself and actually pencil it in on your calendar. You
and all parts of you
deserve it.
We've enjoyed sharing these processes for eliminating fears and building self-confidence with you on this cassette. By taking the time to teach your brain different and effective ways of thinking, you're giving yourself a truly valuable gift. There's no end to the new choices you can create for yourself.
Practice the NLP techniques offered in this program and continue to enjoy your journey toward what you want.